Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
This is the Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Yes, it's time once again. Hot Stove is here. Thanks for being with us tonight. Gary Hill here. We're here every Tuesday night from 7 to 9. This show is going to be a little bit different than most of them. Just a few days ago, we were at T-Mobile Park for the annual spring training luncheon. Myself, Shannon Dreyer, Aaron Goldsmith, all on hand. We had some wonderful conversations. So tonight, we're going to play you those conversations as Jerry DePoto stopped by. We had our chance to meet, first chance to meet, Teoscar Hernandez, one of the newest Mariners. Stephen Vogt, part of the coaching staff, former Oakland A, a delightful conversation coming up. Also, we will sit down and chat with Chris Townsend as we continue our look. In fact, this is our last team that we'll talk about in terms of previewing the AL West. We've touched on the Rangers and the Angels and the Astros. And today it's the Oakland A's turn, and there's a lot swirling around with the A's. So Chris Townsend gives us some really good insight on Oakland coming into the season. But we're going to start the conversation with Cal Raleigh. Cal was back in town as we had a chance to visit with the Mariners catcher.
Cal, when's the last time you were back here at T-Mobile Park?
I guess when I went to raise the 12th man flag.
Okay.
I got to come back here and kind of hang out in the locker room before we walked over. And but you know, all these new additions here, it's kind of cool to see, and all the construction going underneath the stadium.
I mean, you mentioned raising the flag. Your life has changed a little bit since the season ended.
I mean, that was one of the coolest moments of my life, getting to do the flag and see the whole all of Seattle and the Seahawks, and right at kickoff too is super cool, and I'm getting to do that and share with my pops and my brother was really cool.
You will, no matter what happens in your career and no matter where your career takes you, Cal, you are forever a Mariner now. You have been a part of people's greatest sports moments now based on what we all know that you did. How does that make you feel when you reflect and think about that?
I don't know if I could tell you. It's kind of surreal. I don't know if it's totally hit me yet, you know, the whole thing. People always ask, like, what was it like? And I'm like, I still don't even know yet. But just that night in general was so special, you know, not just for me, just to share that with the fans and to see how many people stuck around afterwards and my teammates, this organization, coaches, people that I've known since I got drafted were here. And, you know, some people that I've, you know, shared memories with that are going to last lifetime, and, you know, friends that I'll always be friends with. And it's super cool.
It was obviously momentous for the city of Seattle. And one of the things that, you know, there was a lot of talk, would this be the group that ends the drought? And are they going to put that on their shoulders? And, you know, kind of conventionally, I would think, well, they're not responsible for all of that. But you guys, it does seem you did take it on, that ending the drought was in some ways personal, that you guys wanted to be the ones to do that. How did you internalize that? How did you use that? How did that play into what you as a team did last year?
Yeah, I think, you know, first, you know, rewind all the way back to 21, you know, how close we were and came down to the last weekend of the season. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get it done. And that kind of left a, you know, bad taste in our mouth, and coming in 2022. And then you kind of get off to the slow start and you're like, oh, is this going to be the year? Is this not? Or, you know, you're not even thinking about the playoffs. You just want to have a good team and start winning games. And, you know, once things kind of started rolling and guys got a little more comfortable and kind of understood what was at stake, you know, down the stretch was some of the most fun baseball I've ever played in my life. You know, it didn't matter if I went 0-4 or 4-4, you know, just going in and getting to play and getting a chance to win and knowing what was at stake and what was on the line was really fun.
Along those lines, How do you think about, as the season ended, those three games against Houston where one swing could have changed every one of those games and changed the series? How do you think about how the season ended going into this year and the expectations?
Yeah, again, it left a terrible taste in my mouth and our mouths. It stinks because, you know, one swing of the bat, each of those games, you're like, could have won that game. You know, Julio hits a ball off the wall, I don't know, 110 or something crazy. I mean, you know, it felt like that one should have went out. The roof's closed, maybe it's out. And then, you know, obviously the other ones, you know, hate thinking about it. But, you know, coming this year, we know it's a clean slate and we know we have a job to do, you know, each game. And we know it's a long season and we know there's ups and downs. And I think knowing that now, I think it's only going to help us. And, you know, we know we have to take it one game at a time. You know, we can't just go out right away and get in the playoffs. You know, it takes time. We got to win some games. We got to do some things. And, you know, we're really excited to get going.
This offseason, I hope you got a chance to take a little breath after everything that happened, but with, you know, so many things that happened and so many steps that were taken forward and you cementing a place on this team, let alone being the guy who was raising a flag at a Seahawks. I was worried about the thumb, but it looked like it held up just fine during that, because I heard that's not easy to do. How different an off season was this for you?
Yeah, it's different. You know, last off season going into camp, there's three catchers. It's a short camp, obviously, with the lockout. You're not getting many at-bats because there's just not any to go around, you know, in one position. And kind of have a fight for a job, and then even going into the season fighting for a job. It's completely different. But, you know, my mindset's not going to change. You know, I have a job to do. I'm not really worried about, you know, you never want to get too comfortable, because the minute you get comfortable, the minute you think you got to figure it out, you know, the game will kick you right in the butt, you know, whether that's baseball or another sport or even a job. So, you know, I'm just going to, you know, I'm grateful to be here, and, you know, I'm really excited for this upcoming season.
Cal Raleigh is our guest. How's the thumb, man?
It's great. You know, had the surgery, got the scar right there, and it's, you know, I've had checkups and been in talks with the doctor and our staff here with the Mariners, and they're very happy with how it looks, and it feels great. You know, I've caught my first bullpen yesterday, caught Marco, and felt good. Been swinging and everything. So,
you mentioned catching Marco in a bullpen. I would love to think that you two met at a random park in Seattle. Did you catch him here, or where did you catch Marco?
We just went to a random park and started selling red dogs right next to us. I've been at AZ the past 2 weeks, and, okay, you know, he started coming to the complex a little bit, and he's been wearing me out. He's like, when are you going to catch me? He's like, you're just avoiding me. I was like, no, I got my thumb. Like, I got to take it slow, but caught it, and it looked great the other day, so.
I mean, catching Marco before catching Munoz seems, as a guy coming off a ligament surgery, this seems like the proper move.
Yeah, I say that was a smart move.
Yeah.
that's a business decision. Don't tell him I said that.
You know, it's we talked about you a lot, obviously, on the broadcast last year, and your journey last season. And we're biased because we see you play every day. But it is really hard, Cal, to try to find some type of comp for what your season was like last year that any other player went through. Because, I mean, you were sinking. I mean, you know that. Before the home run in New York against the Mets, right? Like, you were sent down. Obviously, you had to be recalled after the injury to Tom Murphy. But you were really struggling. And to fast forward from being optioned down to doing what you did at the end of the season, and I know you're too humble to speak to this, but the equity that you had to have built up in that clubhouse playing through what you played through at the end, that all those guys know better than we do what you went through, it was like three seasons in one for you. Did it feel that way at all, or when you're in it, or you're just in it and you're just thinking about today?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the time, things were going so fast, and, you know, we had a job at hand, and I was worried about what's on the field. I wasn't even thinking about what was going on around me and how quickly it went. And just kind of since everything's kind of slowed down, it's like, wow, that was really fun. Like, I wish I can go back and do that again. But You know, going back to getting optioned, it was tough. I mean, not easy getting optioned. You know, it's kind of the first time, you know, I've been told, you know, you're not good enough. You need to go get better. You need. And I think, you know, a lot of guys take it personal, I think. But at the same time, you got to realize, you know, the Mariners are trying to win games. You know, it's nothing personal. We need you to get better. And you got to take it that way. You got to look at it that way. You know, I got to get better. I got to make adjustments. I need to kind of approach the game a different way. And, you know, even when I first came up, you know, I wasn't perfect from the getting recalled. You know, I had to learn. I had to do some things different, look at the game a different way. And, you know, once I kind of did that, the game started kind of not saying it got easier, but it was a lot more simple.
Did you relax more when you came back up?
I did, yeah. I've always kind of been a high-strung person, especially when it comes to baseball. And
it really sounded in your voice.
Well,
it really shows.
It's baseball.
It really seems like you're really...
When I'm here with you guys, I'm just chilling. So. But when it comes to baseball, you know, it's something that I've been doing for so long, and I love it. And, you know, I want to win. I want to be the best I can be. And, you know, it's something... But sometimes, you know, you get so close to something or... You know, you try too hard. And, you know, I feel like I was at a point where I was just trying way too hard. You know, I was trying to hit an 8-run home run. That's not even a thing. I mean, you try to do all these things and try to get everything back in one swing, and you just can't. You have to understand that, you know, this is a hard game, and I just need to square the ball up. I just need to move a runner. I need to, you know, block this ball. I need to throw a guy out. I need to do the little things right. And I just want to help my team win. And I think, you know, once I started doing that and not worrying about, you know, my average or anything else that's kind of going on around me that doesn't matter. You know, once I started doing that, I think things got a lot simpler.
So how did it click? Like, what was the, was there a moment? Was it a process? How did it click like that? Because that's what you're describing sounds really easy. Right? It sounds easy to say, oh, just relax a little bit. But you're playing on the biggest stage in the world. It's not easy to do. So how did it happen?
I think it just takes commitment. I think you gotta commit to something. You know, I think, you know, when you're wishy-washy or you're 1 foot in, you're 1 foot out, then I don't know if you're ever really committing something or, you know, making that adjustment. So I think you gotta be both feet in. And, you know, once I kind of got a perspective change, you know, obviously I have, my dad's a coach and he's my mentor and someone I can always lean on. He helped me out a ton, and just kind of a good perspective change and understanding that this game isn't life or death. And, you know, I can help this team by not hitting a home run every single time and doing little things right and not worrying about the silly stuff.
Is that something you had been confronted with in the past and kind of letting go a little bit and concentrating on the smaller things and what you can do? Or was this a first for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've had ups and downs before. I had a bad year my sophomore year in college. I had a kind of a bum thumb then as well. And I struggled a bit, and it's not my first time struggling. So but definitely the first time I've been sent down and understanding that I had to make an adjustment. And, you know, with that being said, you kind of have to look at yourself in the mirror and you kind of, you know, be honest with yourself and, know that, there's adjustments to be made, and you know, you can either go up or down from here.
We're visiting with Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh. It's Hot Stove, brought to you by Hatback. Looking for a fun spot to watch your favorite team? Come to the Hatback Bar and Grill, located across from T-Mobile Park. Great food and beer, plus free parking. It's the place to be. Visit hatback.com to make a reservation. We'll continue our conversation with Cal Raleigh coming up right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
The pitch.
Swing. Hammered out to right field. Ticketed back, and gone. How about another? Cal Raleigh on a historic night. His second career multi-homer game.
Well, that was one of the many homers we saw last year from Cal Raleigh as our conversation continues with Cal. When you look back at his season last year, one of the most amazing aspects is barrel rate. Barrels simply defined as kind of the optimal launch angle and exit velocity. And to kind of give you the context, no surprise, Aaron Judge was first in baseball last year with a barrel rate per plate appearance of over 15%. Yordan Alvarez was second in baseball. Mike Trout was third. You get the idea, right? Cal Raleigh was just outside of the top 10 in baseball last year. He was 12th with a barrel rate of 9.5%. By the way, Teoscar Hernandez was 10th last year, which is significant. So, Cal, the question becomes, how do you square up a baseball?
I think, you see a lot of big guys in the game and guys who can hit the ball a long way, but it doesn't do any good if you can't hit the ball, you know? So I think just cutting the swing down and just understanding that if I hit it, I know it'll go. And, you know, you hear that all the time, like, just touch it. Or the guy's throwing 99. You don't have to do much. You just got to get the barrel out in front and square it up. And it's just something that I kind of realized, you know, I don't need to hit the 500-foot home run. Or I don't need to hit, you know, 3 home runs in one game. Stuff like that. Just knowing that if I square the ball up, I swing at good pitches, you know, the rest is going to take care of itself. You know, I'm not worried about, you know, getting out or having a hit fall. Like, those are all just things that you can't control. So all I know that I can control is swinging good pitches and, you know, squaring the ball up, which you hear a lot from in our organization.
Well, it is funny because you're talking about letting go the pressure of the damage and the big hit, and yet, like, that's all you did.
I think you found the key.
I mean, truly, Cal, I'm sure this word trickles to you at some point late in the season, but you had an historic season by Mariners catcher standards. The club's been around since 1977. There's never been a catcher hit more home runs in one year than what you did last year. I mean, it almost seems like freeing yourself up mentally, as you've described, enabled you to do the things that you were no longer focusing on doing.
Right. Yeah.
It's that simple.
It's that simple. I wish that it was just that easy from the get-go, but it's not. It took a lot of hard work, and it took a lot of focus and a lot of things that, you know, people, you know, fans don't see, you know, whether it's in the clubhouse, in the cages, or even at, you know, my house. But it's not easy, but, you know, once you're able to do that and kind of understand that you don't have to be the best, you don't have to be this unreal expectation of yourself. You can just go out there and just try to help your team win. I think that's the biggest thing, was like, I just want to win. I just want to play to win. When people play to win, you know, they tend to free their mind up and they're not thinking about, all right, I need 2 hits today, or I need to hit a home run here. I just want to help my team. And I think that's the beauty of baseball, is it's a team sport. And it's 1 through 9. When you get a bunch of guys who mesh together really well, it's kind of what you saw last year at the end.
What's it like catching Luis Castillo's movement at 100 miles per hour?
It's not easy, but it's I love it that he's on our team. It's some nasty stuff. And I mean, we saw what he did last year, and then him going to Toronto and doing what he did against a really good lineup. You know, I think people forget sometimes how good that lineup really is. And with him doing that and just absolutely carving him up, and I mean, that's a horse right there. That's a guy, you know, that's a true one. So having that guy, you know, open up on the mound for us this year on opening day is going to be super fun. And
did you just make an announcement?
I didn't make an announcement, but I'm going to assume. But you know what they say about assumptions. So I'm assuming that he will be after what he did last year.
You know, we've never broken news on this show before, Cal. So we liked you before. We like you even more
you
now.
You can break it.
Yeah.
Who are you excited to get to work with down there on the pitching side?
You know, we got some new guys coming in. But I'm really excited for, you know, to get back and work with everybody and kind of, you know, get off on a good foot and, you know, get on the same page like we were last year towards the end. You know, Matt Brash, you know, one guy that comes to mind who really took a step forward last year as far as, you know, when he got his new role. And it's not easy. You know, everybody thinks that, oh, you go to the bullpen, it should be easier. You know, it's not. It's having learned a new role, something he's never done before. And for him to come out and do what he did at the end of the year was super exciting. And you're talking about a guy that could potentially be one of the best relievers in all of baseball by his second year in the league, not even. So having to work with him will be great. You know, obviously working with George and Logan and all the starters, Marco, you know, Flex, Robbie, Louie, it's always fun. And I think we have a good group. Like I've said before, you know, the communication line is always open. So it's easy to communicate. You can go back and forth. You can try to get you know, the best out of each other, you know, not just me for him, but, you know, them for us as well. And I think we have a good group.
You have, in one season, gained the greatest nickname of your era.
That's right.
I've never heard, maybe you've talked, I just haven't heard it, publicly address Big Dumper.
Yeah.
Oh, can we do that again in stereo? That was great. I mean, I'll be honest, Cal, when this first, you know, first it was like the water started, it wasn't simmering yet. There were just little bubbles at the bottom of the pan, right? Yeah. And then it started to simmer a little bit. And we started catching wind of Big Dumper, and we didn't feel comfortable putting that out there. But then Mariner Social came to you, from what I heard, and they said, are you okay with us full branding Big Dumper? And you gave them your blessing.
I did.
And then you went to a classroom after the season was over with, and they chanted Big Dumper, Big Dumper, Big
That's
Dumper.
Right.
I mean, you're all in.
I'm all in on it. I love it. I think it's great. My mom, different story. But it's, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, the fact that fans can have a funny nickname for me and you know, laugh about it and enjoy it and come to the ballpark. And
people who are close to you, do they just call you Dumper?
It changes. They call me Dump, Dumper, Big Dumper, Dumpy. which I don't like Dumpy as much, but I've heard that one a few times, but it's cool. I mean, I walked this morning, walking here, I was working out, and in the glass case, it's not Raleigh jerseys, it's Big Dumper jerseys.
Yes. Yeah,
and
that's right.
Big Dumper t-shirts, and I'm like, this is what it is now.
So you're pregame and you're walking, you know, you're milling around and there's 30,000 people here and people start screaming, hey, Dumper, Big Dumper. You're like,
all for it.
Boy, now that we're tackling the most important issues. So we had Logan on the show last week.
Oh, boy.
And we posed the question, who's got the better goatee, Logan or Cal? We're going to pose the same question to you. Who's got the superior goatee, you or Logan?
I kind of want to hear his answer, but where do you think Logan got his goatee idea from? I mean, I've been rocking it longer than he has, but I'm honestly surprised because Logan's such a routine-oriented person, and, you know, he does the same thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, I roomed with him for 5 years now. He's kicking me to the curb, though.
Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
He's got a wife now.
Yeah.
So I guess that's okay.
But you're the Big Dumper.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. It's like, you guys get a two-bedroom, I'm going to sleep in the other one, and no. But I'm surprised that he actually did it, and now I've heard he's rocking a mustache, so I don't know what he's doing over there. He's just completely changing. He cracks me up. We talked the other day for like an hour and a half on the phone, and I actually got him, you know, they make stencils for goatees.
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
I
got him a stencil for his goatee for his wedding gift.
What is this? I have no idea. I can't even
picture
what this
is. It's like a plastic, I don't even know, like a...
Like, is this
for
grooming purposes?
Yes.
Okay.
So, like, when you're shaving.
You probably spray shave around it.
I got him a real gift, but this is kind of like a gag. This is kind of like a gag gift, and I got it for him. I was like, all right, so when you're shaving your goatee now, you don't have to guess, am I in the right? Or so we can just shave without
Do you use a stencil?
I got him one, I actually got myself one.
Oh, well, there's nothing to mess with. Yours is perfect.
It's because I have a stencil.
That's why it's perfect.
Yeah, but your goatee predated stenciling. Is that not right?
It did. I didn't find out about this till somebody showed it to me. I think it was like somebody DM'd me. They're like, hey, you need to get this for yourself because you always have a goatee. And I just can't grow a beard. I can't.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
What if you and Logan had a goatee grow off? And starting opening day,
I get messy.
You just—that's the whole idea. Who's gonna let it? Who's gonna let it ride? Who can take it the long? I mean, you got the gear.
I don't know. It gets pretty itchy. I don't know if you guys ever had. You had a beard.
Yeah. No, Gary's.
I had a goatee for a long time.
Yeah.
Did you?
I mean,
yeah,
Gary tried to cover much of his face.
The stencil thing's actually really nice because what people don't realize is you start to shave and it gets thinner and thinner and thinner, and all of a sudden you just have this little line right here.
Yeah, you don't want to get a tooth. You don't want to get a tooth thing.
Yeah.
Then it
so the
look
stencil.
Yeah.
I'm all in on that.
It's harder than the.
Do you manicure your own, or do you have the? Does the barber at the clubhouse do this? Do you trust the barber?
I do it myself. You don't trust a lot of people when it comes to close to face stuff.
I understand.
So I've actually never had a shave before. What do they call them? Like the straight
razor? Yeah, exactly. I've never grown facial hair, so I can't relate to this. I can't. I wish I could contribute to this conversation. I just ask questions. I have nothing that I can add, unfortunately.
Were there any special catcher duties in the wedding? Did you have to have a little talk with him before anything? Or
I gave him a pep talk before the wedding, so it was more of a funny pep talk than it was anything. So it was cool, though. I mean, I got to spend it with him and his family and his friends, and it was super special, and I'm super happy for him and Av, and it was a fun night, too. I mean, Julio got to go. Kel got to go. We had a few guys from our minor league days there as well, a bunch of Mariner guys, and it was a lot of fun. You know, we had a good time and danced. And
was there any ounce of Walter that showed up? Like, it's game day. It's like it's start day. I mean, did he have to resist turning into Walter on his wedding day?
He was locked in. He was locked in. So we kind of had to loose him up and be like, hey, you're not starting. This isn't game one against the Astros. Like, this is the wedding day. You should enjoy it. So, but he had a great time, too. I think he ended up doing a split at his wedding.
What?
Yeah. What?
You'll have to ask him about it.
Like a legit split?
Legit. This guy can do a real split.
What?
I don't know if I spilled the beans on this, but you guys are going to have to ask him because, you know, we're going up. I mean, we're always in the apartment or whatever to the minors, and yeah, one day he just busts out a split. I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, who can do a split? He can do a full on split. And he dropped it down at his wedding
dance floor. I assume that's the only place this would be. Okay,
naturally,
you know. How? Hey, so take the split out. Okay, yeah. You can't factor this in your judgment. How is Logan as a dancer? Because we've seen him run.
Oof. It's ugly. I'm not going to lie. I love Logan, and he's a great guy, but that guy was not made to dance.
I mean, he's got a lot of extension.
Better pitcher than dancer.
It's a lot of arms
and legs. Yeah. It's a lot to control.
Yeah. No, it's hard for anybody.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
listen, I'm not a good dancer, but he's definitely not a good dancer.
That's so good. Oh, Cal. Thank you so much. It's great to see you. And I guess we'll see you in a couple weeks in Arizona.
I know. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun.
Well, there was Seattle Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh. Hot Stove continues, brought to you by Hatback. Next time you're at Hatback Bar and Grill, make sure to check out Steelhead's Alley, a space dedicated to Seattle's 1946 Negro Leagues team. Plus, enjoy the collaboration with Seattle's own Metier Brewing. For more info, visit hatback.com/steelheads. We will continue. Jerry DePoto will visit us coming up right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Teoscar Hernandez leads it off with a swing and a drive. Deep to left center field, and this one is gone again. Teoscar Hernandez, a two-run home run in the second, and now a leadoff home run off for Robbie Ray here in the bottom of the fourth, and the Blue Jays now lead it 4-0, and what a day for Teoscar Hernandez.
Well, that was not a great highlight at the time, but now Teoscar Hernandez is on the Mariners side as we're joined by Jerry DePoto, Gary Hill alongside Shannon Dreher and Aaron Goldsmith. By the way, Teoscar Hernandez will be our guest coming up in just a few minutes. But let's start right there with Teoscar. What makes him such a great fit for the Mariners?
From the time we had first considered Teoscar as a potential acquisition, and this dates back to before the 2021 season, is the first time we contacted the Blue Jays about lining up for him. We talked to them again prior to 2022, and part of the attraction is that we have always heard phenomenal guy, you know, great teammate. He's very easy to talk to, easy to engage with. It was pretty obvious from the first phone call we had with him. What he brings to the middle of our lineup seems easy to identify. He hits the ball about as hard as anybody on earth. He has been one of the most productive middle of the order hitters in the league over the course of the last 3 years. I think second or third to Aaron Judge and maybe Bryce Harper in home runs over that time. Just produces runs and does it regularly. You know, he's been a mainstay 2019, 2020, 2021. Barring maybe a little bit of missed time last year, I think with an oblique, He's been steady Eddie out on the field and producing. And that means something to us because in addition to pushing our ceiling, we really wanted to prop up the floor as well. Is, you know, when we go through our big lulls and we've had a couple of them. We had one early in last season, you know, May-ish. Typically, we run into it when we wind up with players on the injured list. And we weren't deep enough to absorb that. Having players who have good histories, durable players who are out on the field, and now increasing the depth in our organization. With what we think we've increased the depth in our organization, we should be able to weather those storms because they'll come again.
Jerry, since you bring up health and durability, your rotation was remarkable last year. Nobody missed a start. You essentially had six starters after the acquisition of Luis Castillo. It doesn't happen. And when it does happen, it doesn't happen by accident. In your mind, what were the key factors that enabled that kind of miraculous feat in today's game to actually transpire?
I think it was miraculous.
It kind of feels that way.
You know, it was remarkable even while we were living through it. You know, you want to pinch yourself because pitcher health is such an unpredictable thing. And it can take a magical season, which, you know, ultimately we had, and turn it on its ear pretty quickly. We're fortunate enough now going into the season where we have six healthy starters to line up with. We've got another five or six in back of that group that we feel really good about. You know, whether it's young guys with big talent who are close or experienced guys who've been through it before and can sub in, I would not expect that we're going to go through our season and not get dinged the way we were able to last year. So building that depth was an important element for us. Part of it is arm health. I would like to give our high performance and training groups some credit. Because of the way we've tried to manage innings on the front end and because of the throwing programs that Woody and Trent and our trainers have really driven from dating back to the minor league development of George and Logan and the group that's come through on through what we do at the big league level. And, you know, it takes a village to do it all. And I think it takes a village to make sure you use six starters over the course of a big league season because it doesn't happen very frequently.
I don't think it also happens very frequently when you have a switch-hitting catcher come up and just kind of take over the world and go through all the ups and downs of a season in a month and then pick up and go. I know he technically wasn't a rookie last year, but it was, in effect, a rookie season for Cal Raleigh. How remarkable in your eyes is it and kind of comparable to others in what he was able to accomplish in that year?
You know, two things really strike me. One, specifically with Cal. More than even the development on the field, which we've always believed that would happen, it ran in conjunction with his development as a leader in our clubhouse and managing our game. He does a phenomenal job of working with our pitchers. He very quickly became like a go-to. He was a veteran overnight in his game management skills. And the starting pitchers especially, they invested in him almost immediately. And to watch what evolved offensively in his game as that went along, I think it was the confidence that began with the quality of what he was doing behind the dish and in his leadership role that really started to bleed into his offensive game. And Cal represents to me what is most intriguing about our season is that we didn't play the Astros a lot in the second half last year. You know, our team was very different from, let's call it, mid-June until season's end. And I think at that point, we only saw them maybe four times. And Cal was a very different player at the end than he was in April and May. Same with Julio, same with George, same with Logan. All of these guys evolved in a way that just made us a very different team. And I don't really look back at last year's team like we need to make up 16 games. It's because of growth like Cal Raleigh. We're a very different team at the end. You know, we were 16 games behind because of the hole we dug ourselves on the front end. But we're just, you know, we were a different team, and I think it's going to continue to evolve. They're still young.
Along those lines, what is the growth expectation for a
young core like that from 1 year to the next year, knowing that every player is a little different. But how do you think about that with so many different guys in kind of that same boat?
You know, last year was like the dreamscape where so many of them clicked right about the same time and just started taking off. And like we talked about just a moment ago with Cal, that confidence that develops when that's all happening, I think just carries over. You know, we've all experienced it in our playing lives. And if you're going to carve out a career of any length, you know what that feels like when it becomes a similar feeling to you, like how you felt playing in high school or in college or when you were in the minor leagues. I think a lot of our guys got over that hump last year. There's still some that we need to help over that hump, but we're confident that they can do it too. And when they come like a flood like that, it is what you see, the energy, the electric, you know, they love coming to the ballpark every day because they're experiencing something for the first time, which is that major league success. And they're doing it with, you know, what wound up being a ballpark full of fanatics that were dying to see a team do this. And I think they really enjoyed it. And they lived their off season preparing to do it again. We're still the youngest team in our division, or we project to be. We added a ton of experience with guys who've played in postseason environments. I think 22 different postseason years for the guys we picked up either via free agency or trade. And that was because we saw what happened last year in our clubhouse when we brought Carlos Santana in. And they had a veteran guy who'd been through it, who could sit there and talk to them and help them. Their talent, their energy, the enthusiasm, you know, their competitiveness on the field, really, it speaks for itself. Having guys in that clubhouse that can help them manage the long season, I think it was a goal of ours this offseason, and I think we delivered.
Jerry DePoto is our guest. How have you and Justin and the entire front office and the baseball ops department been able to put together a roster, both in terms of homegrown guys, but specifically also guys that you've gone out and taken from other organizations that really seem to fit the culture as well as they have? We've heard it from the opposition. We've heard it certainly internally. Cal Raleigh was talking about it earlier today. We've heard Scott talk about it extensively. He's a big part of setting that culture. But it seems a lot harder than what you guys have made it look like, because it really does feel like, and it probably predates even last year, but everybody's rowing in the same direction these days for the Mariners.
You know, one of the things about it, and I think Jim Leland, who I played for in Colorado in the 90s, you know, his 1 year stint in Colorado, Jim said to me, he said, "I'm not a chemist. I don't know how to develop chemistry, but I know when I see it, and then my goal becomes not to F it up." and I think that's, you know, we've watched what's happened with this team. I don't fancy myself a chemist, but, you know, as we've gone through the years with this club, you see personal traits. Each one of them has, you know, someone might be, you know, in Julio's case, he's magnetism, he's personality, he's also humility. He's, you know, he provides leadership in ways that you couldn't possibly have imagined from a 21-year-old. You know, from Kelnick, you get intensity, you get work ethic, you get competitiveness. From Robbie Ray, you get steady. You get, you know, the ups and downs don't really exist with Robbie. You know, he rides the steady, and I think that's positive. That's the same thing you get out of George. It's just steady across. You know, Ty France, he's the guy that kind of, it's the quiet jokester in the background, the guy who takes a little poke, and it's, you need that. You need JP Crawford, who can be like the emotion in a moment to help lift you. You need Gino's good vibes. And when all of that starts coming together, don't lose that. You know, keep that together when you watch it. And then as you see things develop that might negatively affect that, make changes and make sure to preserve that community in your clubhouse, because that's how you win and that's how you sustain winning. I used to joke around through the years, once you've developed that core, now you can invite someone in who might not have the qualities that you were looking for when you were developing that community, and they bring them in and they hug them. They envelop that player and he becomes part of that core, even though it's not a natural fit for him. But you have to let that cement cure before you get to that point. And I think our group has done an effective job of that.
Kind of along those lines, I think one of the neatest things I saw last year I've covered this team for a gazillion years, and along the way at the trade deadline, there would be guys that were grumbling. We're not doing anything. We're not getting it. It might help that you got Luis Castillo, too, a little bit earlier. But this group had, it seemed like an intense belief in themselves. And I think it goes well beyond the Ted Lasso belief. But there was a kind of a turning point where they were saying out loud, we're more than a wild card team. We can go deep in this thing. Which seemed to almost come out of nowhere to see that develop. I mean, how important was that to what you're trying to do? And how did you kind of view when this team started to go and think, you know what, we got it here. We got what we need here.
See, that's the dream. And, you know, I'll say we went to dinner early this offseason with JP and talked about, you know, openly about now, what do you think we need? What does the team need next to get over it? And he said, from what I see, we got what we need right here, to Shannon's point. That's a belief. It's a belief in the teammates around you. It's a belief in what you can do. And then when the next player walks in, you know, when Teo comes through the door or Colton Wong comes through the door or Luis Castillo comes through the door, you can be excited for what that's going to do to you. But they don't need it every day. They don't want it. When you're constantly sitting there focusing on the thing that you don't have, you forget how good the thing you have is. And, you know, and our players have built a community in our clubhouse. They believe they can play with anybody. They know that they're good enough to go win the World Series. They know that any day, and we can go deeper than most in the number of pitchers we can send out there that can just shut down an opponent. They know that when, you know, the bomberos come rolling in, that they have confidence in every single one of those guys that runs out. And it's such a unique thing. I've never been around a team who believes in one another the way this team believes in one another. There are no backseat GMs. There are no, you know, that you need to make this trade. There are no walking up to the office to tell you, you know, they're fed up with X, Y, and Z. And maybe there will be someday. I don't think so, though. This team is just wired in a different way. And my goal is let them continue to drive this, because the dream was that they create the culture that they ultimately have.
Visiting with Jerry DePoto as Hot Stove continues, brought to you by Hatback. This Sunday, get ready for the ultimate watch party at Hatback Bar and Grill. Over 20 TVs, great food and drink. It's the perfect place to catch the big game. Visit hatback.com/reservations to book your spot today. We continue our conversation with Jerry DePoto. More right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to Hot Stove. We continue our conversation with Jerry DePoto, and there's been so much of this conversation already talking about the pitching that this organization has offered. And you look at what this organization has done developmentally the past few years, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Paul Sewald from outside the organization. Just go down the list of all the wins development-wise, not only with pitching now in the major leagues, but also the pitching that we've talked about.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That's on the way. What has allowed this organization to be so great especially the last couple of years, in developing pitching?
You know, I'd like to tell you that there was one key. If I had to point at one thing, it's probably two things, and it's called Woody and Trent. But, you know, I think we have a phenomenal pitching setup within our organization, you know, that starts here in Seattle with Trent and Woody, Max Wiener in our farm system, now Matt Pierpont, who assists Max. we are really built out in that area. And this is something that started for us back in, you know, late 2018, early 2019. You know, we started scratching the surface with Brian DeLunas when Brian was with us, and we started building out these programs. And most importantly, not only were we drafting talented pitchers like Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, et cetera, we were drafting pitchers who believed in the things that we were doing. And when you have that, when you have 95 to 100 with a good breaking ball, a lot of strikes, and belief in the people who are building the programs, that has a chance to turn into magic. And along the way, and I'd like to tell you that we forecast that Paul Sewald was going to turn into one of the best relievers in the American League over a couple of year period. You know, when you have success bringing players in and changing the arc of their career, you know, there's always the biggest part of that is the player's willingness to do something different, to buy in. We had that with a couple of pitchers through the years, Paul among them, and that created such a belief in the programs that we're running. And I think I've shared it with you guys. We now get phone calls from, you know, pitchers who are at that stage in their career who want to come to the Mariners, which is kind of a cool thing when you're getting those calls, and it's a testament to the quality of those people who I just named.
I think Trent Blank has the greatest ratio of the most name drops with the least amount of people knowing who he is.
He's a stud.
So I know his role has changed this year. Tell us about Trent and why he's so important, what he does for your organization.
You know, so Trent, we hired Trent. Brian DeLunas actually brought Trent to the Mariners. And Trent was at the time working at Dallas Baptist University. He's got a very unique perspective on pitching. He's at the intersection of high performance arm care and pitch development, pitching coach. And I would say he leans maybe more toward the former than the latter in his resting position. Quiet guy, huge impact on our systems and our programs. Every one of our players respects him. Wildly. He flies under the radar around the league. Now, I say that we've had 5 or 6 calls through the years asking about Trent, from anything from a major league pitching coach to running somebody's high performance programs. Fortunately for us, he's opted to stay with us each time. He has changed our world in a lot of ways. And this year, he will no longer be in the bullpen where he's been since the 2020 season. He will be moving into the dugout to try to affect in-game strategy, as well as the way we are developing pitching plans. You know, Trent has a lot of planner in him that gets lost in the bullpen. And there's Stephen Vogt will be out in the bullpen with the guys on a daily basis, where he spent a lot of days in his baseball life. And Vogt's like a perfect tonic for how you get through 162. and Trent will affect the day-to-day with our staff. And it's also going to give Trent an opportunity to tap into. For 2 years now, he's been our director of pitching and strategies. He also oversees what's happening at our developmental system. And when you get into a 162-game season, especially like our second half last year, when every game, every inning is so important to the outcome, you tend to invest in that. And this should give Trent the ability to maintain his oversight of what's happening throughout our system.
Before there was you, I don't think we were strategists. I think you had an offensive coordinator at one point. The growth since you have gotten here in baseball ops and analytics and all of that, how do you compare from how many people roughly?
Oh my gosh, it's changed so much. And to the credit of some people that are here and they are movers for us, you know, Jesse Smith and Joel Furman really stand out in our analytics department. We've since added Dave Cameron, who I think is one of the most impactful player personnel analysts that I've ever encountered. And it's his ability to cross lines in our group and have a conversation with a scout and an analyst and bring them together is pretty phenomenal. What we've been able to do in interesting program development in the minor league system, I think if I look back, 7 going on 8 years now, the biggest thing was we were willing to make mistakes on the front end, and we were willing to break a few windows. And in some cases, we probably broke more than a few. And many of the people that we brought in here and took chances on. I think Max Wiener became our pitching coordinator, I believe, at the robust, you know, old age of 25. to the point where we were actually, you know, this past off season, I was asked by another team that was trying to develop their pitching programs, you know, and we wind up being now a team that gets called a lot for, you know, some A, personnel, but B, hey, what's the roadmap here? How did you do the things that you do? And is it true that you guys hired a 19-year-old pitching coordinator? He was 25. But we took chances on young people like Jared DeHart, like Max Wiener, who didn't have a lot of experience, like Connor Dawson. You know, it's probably the thing I'm most proud of is that, you know, we probably would not have evolved the way we did organizationally or been prepared for sustaining this success that I think we're now prepared to sustain if we had not gone through building those programs with those young people, trusting them to lead us towards something or into an area where, frankly, we were carving a new path that we didn't know a lot about. And, you know, it required the village and they led the way. And it's been so, you know, a titanic change for us organizationally. And some of the things that I remember, you know, as tenets of my own 8 and 10 years ago, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, did I really think that way? and credit to the people that we work with. They do a phenomenal job and deserve all the credit.
Thanks, Jer.
You bet.
There it is, Jerry DePoto. It's the Hot Stove. Planning on coming out to more than one Mariners game this season? Well, you should. Consider a Flex membership. You can choose the games and seats you want all season long, plus save at least 10% on tickets and pay no fees. Come on board at Mariners.com/Flex. We still have a lot to get to in this edition of Hot Stove. Chris Townsend going to give us a look at the A's later on in the show. Speaking of A's, Stephen Vogt, former Oakland Athletic, former All-Star, now a part of the Mariners coaching staff. He's going to visit. Coming up next, though, we are going to sit down with one of the newest Mariners, slugger Teoscar Hernandez. That comes up next, right after this, as Hot Stove continues.
This is the Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
The next offer on the way, swinging a fly ball deep to left field. Kelnick going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball. Teoscar Hernandez with a two-run home run here in the bottom half of the second, and the Blue Jays have taken an early 2-0 lead.
Well, that homer was obviously when Teoscar was on the other side, now a Seattle Mariner. Hot Stove continues. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith here as we sit down with one of the newest Mariners, Teoscar Hernandez. And the obvious starting point, how does it feel to be a Seattle Mariner?
Oh, man, it feels great. As soon as I got traded, I was so excited. To join the club and the people, the players, the fans, and all the things that I watch from the other side, the excitement that this organization have and the people around it. And for me, it's a pleasure to be part of it.
So. I know when players switch teams, there's a lot of text messages that get exchanged, a lot of phone calls. Has Robbie Ray reached out to you? Because he's probably happy that you're now no longer facing him.
He actually was the first one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Robbie was my guy. We became a really close friends in Toronto in the time that he's been over there. A couple of years ago, he's an excellent person. He's always there trying to help him, everybody. And try to do things to make everybody feels good, and he's unbelievable. And now I had the chance to play with him again, as in the same team.
So what was that like? We all kind of went through it together at the end of in October in Toronto. What did you see from the Mariners when they were on the other side in that series?
Oh, I think I think we had them in that game.
You're right.
I think we're gonna win that game easily, and then we're gonna fight and next day to go through the next step. But they see a chance, and they take care of and they come back and win the ball game. I mean, it was like a shock for us. because we never thought we were going to lose that game. But that shows a lot the things that this organization, that this team can do. And it doesn't matter if they're losing. They're gonna still end the game, and then they're going to try everything in their power to try to come back and win it.
We've seen the workout pictures, the videos with you and Julio. What's your relationship like with Julio?
I mean, right now, we're just trying to get it together 100%, try to be on the same page and try to learn from each other. I'm trying to know him and really well so we can be really close in during the season and in spring training. But like you can see that from the other side. You don't have to meet Julio to know that he's an excellent person, that he's an excellent kid and an awesome player, that he's enjoy everything that he do in a baseball field and even out of the baseball field. He's always happy. He's always trying to have fun, making jokes with the people around him. And that tells a lot about a people, about a person. And he's been excellent. We've been having a lot of fun in Tampa training.
Mariners outfielder Teoscar Hernandez is our guest. You and Julio seem really similar, right, in a lot of ways. Big smile, big personality. You look like you both, well, we know Julio, and we've seen you from afar, just love playing baseball. That seems to be a real theme up and down the roster for the Mariners. When you found out of the trade, I know you spoke to a little bit about your excitement, but from a culture standpoint, this seems like the perfect fit for you in terms of the environment that Scott and his coaching staff have created for the players.
That was one of the reasons I was so happy, because I was going from a team that is almost doing the same thing that the Mariners were doing last year. And you can see that. Like, the Blue Jays were a team that we're together when I was there, that we're trying every little moment, we're trying to make it the best that we can and enjoy the best that we can. And going to an organization that you can see it from the other side, the same thing that you were doing in Toronto, it's a perfect fit for me. And one of the reasons I was so excited for the trade, it was because of that, because I was going into a team that is going to continue doing the same thing that you were doing when you were in the old team.
What is it like for a player when you get on a team where everybody is invested, that they do take ownership of it, and they are going in that same direction? It sounds like you had it in Toronto. We saw that with this group last year. What does that do for you as a player?
It does a lot. You know, it gives you one of the biggest things as a player is to be your confidence. When you go out there, you know your teammates are going to get you back. It doesn't matter what happened in on the field. They're always going to be there for you, and vice versa. You're always going to be there for them. And I think that's one of the biggest things for a baseball team. You have to be there for each other. You have to fight together. If somebody make an error, just don't worry. You got it the next time. Or a pitcher give up a homer. You just go out there. You just keep fighting. Keep fighting. We're going to get it. We're going to get back to the game, and we're going to win it. So that's for me, that's the key, and that's the biggest thing.
We're pleased to be joined by Teoscar Hernandez, Mariners outfielder. Teoscar, you have some really elite skills in the batter's box. I mean, you are a true middle-of-the-order bat. That's why you're here. That's why the Mariners got you. There are few players in the game right now who hit the ball consistently as hard as you do and who find the barrel as frequently as you do. What is it besides just strength? Because there's a lot more than that, we know. Mm-hmm. What is it besides that enables you to do that year in and year out?
I don't know. I think it's not thinking about it. I'm going out there and not think about what I can do. It just trying to get focused and having a good swing, looking for a specific pitch, one spot, and trying to make the best that I can. And the results, I'm not worried about the results. I just wanted to get a good at-bat and try to do things to help the team.
What about away from the field? Who is Teoscar Hernandez? What if you know, you're in the off season, you've got all of this time to yourself now. What do you like to do when you can put baseball away?
I like to cook. I like to spend time with my family, with my kids, because during the season, I see my kids maybe when we wake up in the morning, and then I come here, and by the time I get back home, they're sleeping. So I like to spend time with my family, with my kids. I go back to the Dominican with my people that see me grow as a person and as a player, and just have a good time over there.
As we have this conversation, we're looking out at T-Mobile Park. How much do you enjoy playing here?
I don't know, but it's a lot. I don't know. it just from the beginning of my career, when I was in Houston, I came here, and the first time I said, wow, this is beautiful. And since then, I love this stadium, and it's one of my favorites. And now I'm going to be here as a player, playing for the home team.
I got to know more about Chef Hernandez. I mean, Scott Service is coming over to your place for dinner. Mm-hmm. What are we making the skipper?
Anything that he wants. Okay. I'm gonna ask him, obviously, what's his favorite food, and I'm going to make it for him. I know how to cook anything.
What's the meal that you make that your family enjoys the most? And I realize that there are kids involved here, so that, you know, it's on a curve a little bit as a result. But what's the go-to home meal?
I can say rice, beans, and chicken. I'm really good in the grill, too. I know how to make a lot of meat different ways, different flavors, too. But I can make a lot of different plates, and they're good, too.
Do you follow recipes, or did you learn when you were growing up? What are your influences when you were cooking?
Well, I learned when I was in Rookie Bowl on my own. I have to learn because we didn't get paid a lot in Rookie Bowl, so I have to figure it out so I don't have to spend a lot of money buying food.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was looking at your minor league log. So here you are, a kid from the DR. You play your first year of professional ball there, then you come to the States. Mm-hmm. You're 19 years old. You spent part of that season in Lexington, Kentucky. The next year, you're now 20. You spend almost the entire season in Davenport, Iowa. What is a 19 and 20-year-old kid from the Dominican Republic? What is it like being in Kentucky and Iowa? I mean, that would test anybody.
I mean, when I came to the States, I had a goal, and that is to be the best player I can be. And to move forward the same year throughout leagues. And when I get here, I just get focused on baseball. I don't get distracted. I don't drink. I don't go out. When it's season time, it's season time. So I don't do anything else beside that, but just work and get focused on the things that I have to do in the baseball field.
Was the cooking when you were in the Gulf Coast League, was that as much economical because of money savings as it was feeling home, like feeling like there was a sense of home there? Or was this strictly dollars and cents, Teoscar?
Yeah. It's you know, you as a kid, you like to save, especially me. I'm not a big fan of buying clothes or shoes or shins and necklace and all that. I'm not a material guy. I don't follow that, but I like to save and do the things that I love.
Should we be watching you and sunflower seeds in the dugout? Should we?
I mean, I have to ask the other guys. Okay. See if they like it. If not, it's okay.
Baseball Reference has your nickname.
Yeah, Mr. Seeds.
Mr. Seeds. Yeah. Is this a thing? Like, do you go by that, or is this just a Baseball Reference thing?
I mean, if you call me in the street or here in the state, if you call me like that, I'm gonna listen to them.
Yeah. When did this start?
I don't know. It just it was at the beginning when I was in Toronto. I see celebrate, all the teams celebrate with different things. And in that time, we don't have anything. And I said, oh, well, I'm going to start just dumping sits in the heads when somebody hit a homer. Or I don't know. It just started like that, and then it gets like a thing in Toronto. So I just keep doing it. A lot of fans don't like it, but
really,
yeah.
Well, it's probably a lot better than an ice bucket. And we'll tell you right now, when you hit those 400-foot bombs plus out there, watch out for Ty France. He's going to be the one who's coming after you with the water. Just giving you that one little piece of advice.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, anything that you do after you hit a homer, I take it.
You've hit a lot of home runs in your career. Do you have a favorite home run that you've hit?
Yeah, it was the one that I hit last year, opening day. We were losing a game. It was 7-1, I think. Against Texas, and we came all the way back, and I hit a homer, 3-run homer, to tie the game. So that's one of the biggest one and one of my favorites, and obviously the ones that I hit in the walk.
I thought you were going, man. But that was a gimme.
Yeah. But those are different. Those are different.
All right. Well, tell you, Oscar, it's great to have you in Seattle. It's great to see you. We can't wait to see you on the field. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
One of the newest Mariners, Teoscar Hernandez. The Mariners promo schedule is here. It's jam-packed. Can't miss giveaways. A Julio bobble, a JP Funko pop, the Clinch Cow bobble, Mariners crossbody bag, 7 fireworks nights, so much more. Check out the full lineup and get your tickets at mariners.com/promotions. We're going to talk to the newest member of the Mariners coaching staff coming up next. He just walked off the field. Stephen Vogt on the way right after this. Hot Stove continues.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
The 3-1 swing, and this is shot out to right field. A lot of trouble, and this is gone. Stephen Vogt on a 3-1 offering goes deep out to right field for the first run of this game. It's 1-0 A's on a no-doubter by Stephen Vogt.
Hot Stove is back. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher. Yeah, Mariners have faced Stephen Vogt enough, and now he's on the Mariners side as we get a chance to sit down our first conversation with the newest member of the Mariners coaching staff, bullpen coach Stephen Vogt joins us now. And the place to start is, how excited are you to be a member of the Seattle Mariners coaching staff?
I couldn't be more excited to be joining the Seattle Mariners staff and an organization that's in the position they are, and makes it for a really good transition from playing into coaching. And I couldn't be more thrilled to be in Seattle.
Part of that transition seemed to be kind of your goodbye tour, or kind of, I use that in quotes. You seem like you had kind of a unique kind of just way to kind of close the door that played out over a little bit of time with the A's.
I did, yeah. I felt very blessed that the Oakland A's felt that they wanted to do that for me. And I kind of made the decision kind of halfway through the year that it was going to be it. And so I wanted to enjoy my last few months with that decision made. And then that right at the end of the season, the last kind of 9-10 days, the Oakland A's really honored me and thanked me just for the 6 years that I was with them. And I can't even put into words what that meant for my family and for me. And it was a really special ending to a really fun career.
It was always fun from our perspective to go to Oakland and to, it's not a giant fan base that we see there every night, but they're very passionate and very connected to you. How would you describe your relationship with the Oakland fan base?
I think what it was is that I was just a regular guy that was out there. And I think I'm someone that people can relate to, because when you watch me play, there's not going to be this greatness. There's not going to be this flash, this flare. It's like, hey, if that guy can do it, I can do it. And I think there's an element of that with Oakland, and I'm a regular guy. I interact with fans a lot. I let them in. I let them get to know me. I'm very real and open and candid with them. And I think that's something that people gravitate towards. And especially in Oakland, in a town like that, where you don't get the huge crowds every night. You don't get – there's a ton of passionate fans that are at home, but they're not at the ballpark. And so for the select group that does show up every day, we really made it a point, and me especially, I want to thank them for being there because it really does help us play better. It really does mean a lot. And so I think just connecting with the fans in Oakland in that way and just being who I was, I think it was a really good match.
What was the most unique part of being an Oakland A?
Oh, man. besides the white cleats, besides the Coliseum, I think it's a pride that we all play with. And Bob Melvin really did a great job when I was fortunate enough to play for him there, and saying that this is our stadium. This is our field. Like, wearing this uniform means that we show up to work every day and we give it our all for our fans. And that was so to me, it was the unique perspective of, we know we're not going to have a packed stadium. We know we have the Coliseum, which is beautiful in its own way, but it's the Coliseum. But we're going to go out there and play, and we're going to make it tougher on whoever comes to town. And that's our objective. And so to me, it's that we had this, you know, phrase green collar, and, you know, instead of blue collar. But that's really what it was, is we're going to go out there and we're going to make your life miserable for 9 innings. We may not win, but we're going to make your life miserable for 9 innings.
Of course, you've been on the other side against the Mariners all these years with the A's, including last year. What did you see from this Mariners team on the other side?
I saw, obviously, there's so much talent in that dugout and in that organization. But what I saw was a group of guys who believed they could do it. You know, I think over the course of my career playing against the Mariners, played against some very good Mariner teams. But there wasn't this sense of, we can do it this year. It was kind of like, oh, I hope. But I really felt like the team last year, when we every time we would play them here or in Oakland, all right, boys, we got to strap it on. This team's hungry. This team believes they can do it. And that's a whole different feeling you got when you were playing against the Mariners last year. And it was a group that came together, had the talent and the belief that they were going to get it done.
Have you thought about how strange it's going to be heading to spring training and You're not taking the field. You're not in the cage. Have you thought about just how different that's going to be for you?
Yeah, you know, it's been on my mind, you know, kind of throughout this winter, and I haven't. You know, the good part for me is I knew my playing days were done. Mm. You know, I had felt, okay, I probably earned a couple extra years at the back end that I maybe shouldn't have got, but I kind of was able to turn the page during this last year. And I went through a transition kind of late in the year in September where I was watching a game, and as a competitor and as a baseball player, what always drove me was, I know I'm one of the best players in the world and I'm going to prove it every night. And when I would watch guys play, I'd be like, I can do that better. I can do that better. And towards the end of last year, I started watching the game. I'm like, man, these guys are so good. And I'm watching other people catch and I'm watching other people hit, and I'm like, it's their time. My time's done. And I'm so thankful that I had that. And my wife, Alyssa, she's always there to talk it out with me and be a big part of it. And so it helped me realize and transition that it is time to move on. And I know there's going to be moments, to get to your point about spring training, there's going to be moments where I miss it. When I hear the crackling of the cleats on the cement, it's one of my favorite sounds of spring training that never really gets talked about. We talked about the pounding of the glove and the crack of the bat. Those are beautiful sounds. But one of mine as a player is, when we're walking out to the field, we walk across cement, which we never do in the regular season. We only do it in spring training. And that crackling of the cleats is, all right, it's go time. And so I think when I hear that, when I hear all the sounds, when I smell the grass, when I smell the new baseballs, the pine tar, of course you're going to have feelings of missing it. But I've made that transition for me, and I'm not going to miss working out. I'm not going to miss having to face Logan Gilbert's 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm not going to have to miss worrying about the game from last night personally. And I can really, really just dig in and help people learn faster than I did. And that's my goal.
They always say that catchers make the best managers. I don't know if that's the path that you want to be on right now, or if that's the path that you are on. But when did it kind of come into your head that, yeah, I would like to be in a dugout or be in a bullpen? And how did you come to become with or sign with the Mariners?
Yeah, you know, what my future holds in baseball, I'm not 100% sure. I know this is that I love this game and I love this industry and I love the major leagues. It's the best baseball on the planet. Mm. And I've always known I wanted to coach. And at what level, I'm not sure, or in what capacity. But for me, it kind of happened organically. You know, the Mariners reached out with a possible job opportunity, and it kind of morphed its way into realizing I want to be on the field. I want to be in there every day, because unless you've spent 162 games in a clubhouse, in uniform, traveling, you have no idea what these guys go through on a day in and day out basis. You just don't. And so for me, coming fresh off of doing that for the last 16 years, being able to help those guys transition and, like I said, learn faster, the only way I could do that is with some baseball pants on coaching. And it just became clear, and I'm so fortunate the opportunity came along with the Mariners to join a team and a franchise like this.
What do you feel like you bring to the role?
I think I bring a lot. I'm very confident in that, and I think I bring a world of expertise from as far as calling baseball games, understanding pitch sequences, understanding competing. I've had to work every inch for everything I ever earned in this game, and like I said, I've learned a lot of lessons, and I want to help people learn them faster. I've sat out full years with injuries. I've been sent down from the major leagues 10 times. I've been DFA'd twice. I've been traded. I've been released. I've been, you name it, I've been an all-star.
Yeah.
No matter what someone is going through outside of an absolute superstar, because I have no idea what they're thinking. I could never have one of their thoughts. But outside of that, I know what these guys are going through. So I can read the body language. I can have those conversations, have the relationship with guys to just help. That's all I want to do. I want to learn as much as I can from this unbelievable coaching staff and front office, and I want to learn from the players. But I want to be there to help talk things out. I've been back behind the plate in playoff games. I've been in the box with the game on the line with two outs in the ninth facing the best closers, and I know what you guys are going through, and I've succeeded and failed at it multiple times. So to be able to be a sounding board for the players and for the staff, we're going to learn a lot from each other, and I know I'm going to be able to help contribute and bring a lot of that to this team.
Who have been some of the influences that you've had, a coach that has helped you along the line or left a big imprint?
We don't have enough time for me to thank all those people or give them a shout out, but to pick a few, Bob Melvin was my manager for 6 years or 5 years in Oakland, and what I learned from him was how to be the same person every day and how to let players just go be themselves. He never asked us to be anything. He never said, do this. No, it was go be the best version of yourself. And he'd help us along the way to discover that. But it was never telling someone what they needed to be or what his expectations of you was. It was just go play. He's one. And then actually the other one is Matt Cotraro. He just got the managing job with the Kansas City Royals. He was my first manager in pro ball, my first 2 years in the minor leagues, and he taught me everything I know about work and how to be a professional and how to make sure that you are doing everything you can do to be prepared to play every single day and the things that it takes away from the field, on the field, in your personal life, and everything. I can't thank him enough for the foundation that he laid in those first two seasons of minor league baseball that allowed me to have the career that I did. And so just to pick two off the top of my head, those two, I still chat with both of them pretty regularly, and they're still huge influences on me.
Are you bringing out your catcher's mitt to the bullpen with you? Oof. Just in case. Oh.
Sliders, lots of sliders.
only if they give me a stool that I can sit on. I don't need to be squatting down anymore. The world doesn't need to see that anymore.
I mean, 16 years, how are the knees after all that? You doing okay?
Yeah, knees are all right.
No, that's good.
My hips and back are another story, but, you know, it's kind of nice, you know, not having to be working out as hard as I used to and not having to eat as much as I used to and all that stuff. So actually, I feel pretty blessed. My body feels pretty good, and just need to be able to catch my kids and be able to play catch with some of these pitchers this year and play some golf.
And for fans that don't know, you're a local guy. You've been around here for a while.
I have, yeah. I've lived in Olympia for 13 years now. Yeah. And my wife, Alyssa, grew up in Olympia, went to Capitol High School. and we met in college, and we moved back up here in 2009. So I guess 14 years ago, we've been living up in the Northwest. So I've been a Northwest resident now for 14 off seasons, and we feel really blessed to have an opportunity to stay home. The first time in 16 years, we don't have to move as a family. So it's an unbelievable feeling, and it's a dream to be making the transition here in Seattle.
Well, congrats. It's great to have you. It's great to chat with you, and we'll be seeing you very soon in Arizona. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
You bet. Can't wait to get down there.
Stephen Vogt, newest member of the Mariners coaching staff. We had some A's conversation in here. We're going to have some more A's conversation coming up next. Chris Townsend, part of the A's broadcast team. Really interesting conversation coming up next. There's a lot happening with the A's, so we're going to talk about it as we continue our opposing previews in the AL West as the Hot Stove rolls along right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Hot Stove continues. Gary Hill and Shannon Dreyer here as we sit down with Chris Townsend, part of the Oakland A's broadcast team, part of A's Cast. You can find him on Twitter at Townsend Radio. Chris, it's great to have you with us tonight. We're going to dive a lot into the A's and what the Athletics are looking like coming into the season. But let's start the conversation with a guy we just talked to, Stephen Vogt, a newest member of the Mariners coaching staff, of course, a beloved Oakland A. How would you describe his connection to the fan base, how the fans feel about Stephen Vogt?
You know, normally when you're a player that has, as you said, a great connection with a fan base, you think of a player as someone who's going to get Hall of Fame votes, someone that you think about you're going to retire their number, maybe potentially when we ever get a new ballpark like you guys have, where Griffey has the statue out front. But it just really shows you what a great human being Stephen Vogt is, how he has connected over time, because he hasn't been with us the whole time, right? But his time in Oakland has been so special. And just salt of the earth person. You guys are so lucky. You're going to love him on an everyday basis. What he means to everyone, it doesn't matter who you are in the organization. You will have a connection with him. There will be a friendship. There will be mutual respect. And I don't say you get that from most guys, to where everybody will know him. Everybody will love him. And it's why we will always celebrate him. He's truly one of the great Oakland A's, even though he's not a Hall of Famer. And we've had our Hall of Famers, and we've had our World Series champions, and we've had, you know, these eras of A's baseball, 70s, 80s, even in the early 2000s, of phenomenal players. Even though he's not that guy, you're never going to look at his baseball reference page and go, wow, Stephen Vogt's one of the great A's of all time. I'm putting him with Ricky Henderson and Reggie Jackson and Catfish Hunter. But he is one of the most loved A's of all time. And it's because he's such a special person. The way his family grew up with his wife, his young kids, as they got older around Oakland, it really was such a special relationship. And it's sad that he's going to be with the Mariners. Great for you guys. But at least he's in division. We'll still be able to talk to him all the time.
So where are these new Stephen Vogts and new A's, beloved A's, going to come from? You know, the Mariners took the step back a few years ago and they had a big plan. I know it's more of a rotating or revolving plan with the A's. Where are they with this right now?
Well, if you really look at our track record, we don't go so much to where we're going to go through 5-6 years of a rebuild. That's just not what the A's do. I mean, we're basically what you see when it comes to what you need to do if you want to be competitive in modern baseball and be a smaller market, is you're going to have your opportunity to win 2-3 years, maybe 4 at most, and then you take a step back. I mean, just look at it. Look where we were in 12, 13, and 14. We're in the playoffs. Take the step back. Here we're back. 18, 19, 20, and even into 21 where we won, what was it? We won 86 games. We're in that step back again. But the thing with the A's is we don't go full dumpster fire. We're not sitting here taking guys from other teams who are 18, 19, 20. A lot of the guys that we end up picking up in these trades are players that have had a little big league time or they're about ready for the big league. So our journey to the bottom, let's just say, isn't as long as most teams traditionally. And it's kind of like, you know, in Billy Bean and David Forrest, we trust because they have that track record that we're never bad for that long. And then before you know it, we sneak back up on you. And there we are in the postseason. So we're probably a year or two away, but we have a lot of these guys that are about to be ready to play big league baseball. We're not sitting here relying. We're not doing what the Astros did years ago or what the Orioles did years ago, where you're relying on a bunch of young kids and you hope. We have a bunch of guys who are ready to start playing. So hopefully we will be more competitive this year, but I would say next year and the year after that are when you're going to look up again and go, wow, here they are again. Remember, we always surprise people, right? Every single year, no one gives us a shot. Everybody says, and then all of a sudden you're like, here the A's are again. But that won't be this year.
Who are some of the guys going into spring training that you're looking at that you think will be part of this core moving forward?
A lot has to do with pitching. Like, you look at Ken Waldichuk and J.P. Sears. They're two of the guys we got from the Yankees. Sears actually pitched well at the big league level for the Yankees before we got him, but they were guys in AAA. Ken Waldichuk actually played ball here at St. Mary's College. He's definitely a stuff guy. We got Kyle Moeller in the Sean Murphy trade. We got him over, big left-handed pitcher. He actually had a complete game in AAA last year. I was like, is this, that's like finding Bigfoot, for God's sakes, a complete game in the minor leagues for a pitcher. So we have a bunch of these young pitchers that are coming that, and you know, like Ken Waldichuk last year, on the last day of the year, outdueled Shohei Ohtani at the Coliseum. So we have these young, talented guys that are coming. They better, because last year, I don't know if you guys know, we used 64 players last year. So we've had a little fun on my show saying for $1,000, if you can name all 64 players from last year and a bonus of $10,000, you can give me their numbers. That's the game we've been playing on my show, because it's great. By the end of the year, you're looking around going, man, we got number 67. We got 73. We look like an offensive line out there at the end of the year. We had so many guys. So we will be better this year. But we do have a lot of, like, offensive wise, a kid by the name of Geloff was our second round pick out of Virginia. He's blossomed and put up some big numbers. We expect him to show up this year. Tyler Soderstrom, his dad was a former first round pick for the San Francisco Giants. He's from the Central Valley here. He's kind of a prodigy kid. His dad has one of those baseball camps where all these guys are going, kind of like a drive line where they're all going to get better. Well, this kid's been playing with all these guys, and he should be a big leaguer for a long time. You're going to see him this year. So there's this talent that's coming. They're not maybe the biggest names, but they're definitely guys that can play, that are going to show up, and they're going to help. It's going to be – last year was – you had such the problem last year that you were going to trade all these guys, but you also had a lockout. So you had the lockout ends. Now you just got to trade a bunch of these guys, and you got to do it quickly, and everything happened so quickly, and you weren't able to, you know, you have the big pond that people fish in for free agency, and then you have that smaller pond, and we've always dominated that smaller pond. Well, there really wasn't fishing at that smaller pond because of the lockout. Well, that really affected last year, and that's where you got all these different players. But this year will definitely be different. We've actually signed guys this year. When you look at Peterson and Diaz, some veteran guys, and we have some versatility, but there are some young guys coming from the pitching standpoint and the offensive standpoint that you will see in Oakland that, you know, you hope will be a big part of your future.
Bob Melvin was a longtime staple in that dugout there in Oakland. What were the reviews on Mark Kotze's first season?
He's very much like Bob 2.0. And obviously, you know, I did the Bob Melvin show and still talk with Bob Melvin a lot. And it was really hard to lose him because Bob was so special. He was a guy that understood all the hurdles. He understood the issues that you were going to have as an Oakland A's manager. He grew up here. He grew up on the peninsula. And when Bob was growing up here is when the A's were winning three straight World Series. And he wore number 6 to honor Sal Bando, who we just lost, our former captain. So Bob got, you talk about a manager that gets it for, and I know, you know, whatever happened up there in Seattle, but in Oakland, Bob Melvin was perfect. I mean, you think of, you got two Hall of Fame managers that were here, Dick Williams and Tony La Russa. Bob Melvin has more wins than them as an Oakland A manager. So when we lost him, it was devastating. But Mark Kotze, being a former A and being a guy that they've been grooming and have been on Bob Melvin's staff, losing Melvin, bringing in Kotze, Kotze obviously knew coming in what the deal was. You're going to have a lot of different players. last year was going to kind of be, you know, we'll call it as it is, a train wreck, but we're going to get better and we'll get better fast. And Mark Kotze basically told everybody, listen, we're going to use so many different players. He had the speech at spring training that was great, you know, because he's been through everything. He's been on good teams. He's been on bad teams. When you play 17 years in the big leagues, and for a lot of different organizations and for a lot of different managers, Mark Kotze played for a lot of great managers. You learn a lot of things. So the message that he had for everybody at the big league level all the way down was, you know, you're all going to get an opportunity. And Mark Kotze did something last year that I don't think a lot of veteran managers do. He had a lot of connection with the young players in our minor league system, where he was getting on something like this, like a Zoom call with guys in A-ball, with guys down in Arizona in the rookie league. So he was a manager that you were hearing his voice, you were seeing his face, which is like unheard of, right? That the big league manager is taking time. He's out on the road. He's getting on these calls with the minor league team. Just remember saying, hey, guys, this is your goal. This is where you want to be. And so I think, you know, first year, there's going to be a, you know, decision making. I mean, so when you lose 102 games, what are we talking about with decision making, right? You knew you're going to lose almost every single night. But I think from a messaging standpoint and a leadership standpoint, we saw a lot of great qualities in Mark Kotze. And once again, if you go back and look, whether it's Bruce Bochy or Tito Francona or all the different great managers that Mark Kotze played for, I think there's a little bit of all those guys in Mark Kotze.
What's your view on this division and how you think it may shake out through the course of the season?
Isn't it amazing? You know, being down at the winter meetings and seeing all this love for Dusty Baker and the Astros. It's just, it really is amazing to me. And I know Evan Drellich of The Athletic, who's down there in Houston, has covered them for a long time. He's come out with a book. He's going to join my show coming up here about how you can be so successful despite all the dysfunction. How you can win no matter what. I mean, the Astros are truly amazing in a good and bad way. Their players, fantastic. I mean, how many teams can say they, if you don't agree to the kind of contract they want, that they can say, see you later, Correa, see you later, Cole, see you later, Verlander, see you later to anybody, and nobody, like, calls them on it. Like, most teams, you lose players with those kind of pedigrees. Everybody's freaking out, and the Astros do whatever they want. They don't care what the PR hit is. They don't care what their fans think, and they just keep on winning. It's and until somebody, you know, then all of a sudden they signed Abreu. Here's now a big right-handed bat. I know he's not the same guy, but he's still going to, in that ballpark, he's still going to put up numbers, and we'll see how they replace Verlander, because I do believe that's a lot of innings. It's a lot of wins and a lot of innings, but the Astros are the cream of the crop. It's hard to believe. What, 6 straight ALCSs, 4 World Series appearances, 2 World Series, and they keep winning despite all the things that go on around them and the stuff that you hear. It's nice to see. It was good to see you guys get into the playoffs. That was pretty hard to believe that, you know, a great baseball town and all the talent that's gone through Seattle, that you guys hadn't been in the playoffs since 01. That was good to see, and you guys are going to be there, no question about it. The big wild, I mean, Texas has spent a lot of money, but I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it whatsoever. You can throw a lot of, we've seen teams throw a lot of money at it. They got Jacob DeGrom. I've been saying it for years. Great. He goes out there for 5, maybe 6 innings, and then the game starts, right? Seager without the shifts. I mean, he was already bad defensively. Now he's going to be really exposed without the shifts. Their defense isn't very good. So I'm not really buying them. A wild card is always, talk about this. This was crazy. So, you know, that last series of the year, last season, remember it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Nobody really cared about the bad teams. It was us against the Angels. It was kind of like, why are we doing this? As I told you, we played 64 players last year. That's the record for the A's. The Angels, they use 65 guys. Now for us, it sounds okay. We're going through a rebuild. They've got Trout, they got Otani, they got Rendon, they got one of the highest payrolls, and they used 65 guys last year. So I think this will be another year where you have people say, oh, look out for the Angels, and you're going to have us going, I'm not buying it. I mean, to me, it's a two-horse race between you guys and the Astros, I think, no question. too many question marks about pitching and defense for the Texas Rangers. And it's going to look good with Bochy and all the money that they spent. And still, it's, you know, Otani, it's funny. It's like he pitches once every 6 days. And when you're a DH, I actually got into this with the Angels writer. I said, you know, if we get into data and everything, I just look at the math. They go, Otani's a DH. He's only participating in essentially a couple innings a game. It's 9 innings. You're a DH. You don't play defense. You got, you know, 4 at-bats. If he doesn't do anything in those 4 at-bats, you know, okay, you're going to pay this guy all this money. Good luck. I mean, he makes them a ton of money. So that whole thing about him leaving, I'm not buying it, because if you really look into the business of Otani, what he makes, your return on investment is incredible with Shohei Otani. But I'm not buying the Angels. No pitching. They are who they are. I think they're going to be a train wreck again, too.
Okay, first off, I love your I'm not buying it. I think we ought to cut that out, and we ought to use that as a drop. We should have that on hold, and that could be a thing right there. I think that's great. You mentioned Billy Bean a couple of minutes ago, and it's a question I get from a lot of people, you know, that don't work in the game. There's a lot of curiosity still about him, and it is, what is he doing right now? What's his involvement in the A's?
So Billy no longer is going to be the head of baseball ops. We knew this was coming a long time ago. When you've been in the game, you know, you got to realize he took over in 1997. So say to your audience, where were you in 1997? That's how long Billy Bean has been running the A's. And there was, you know, the rumblings about that, you know, the Red Sox group that's been acquiring all these teams and what they've been doing overseas in soccer, that they, you know, Billy was going to join that group. It didn't end up happening. And, you know, Billy already is on boards of different companies. He's on a board of a soccer team. He's got a lot of interest other than running a baseball team day to day. So right now he is just going to be the right-hand man of our owner, John Fisher. And that's how his involvement is still going to be with the Oakland Athletics. And he's here for the organization. David Force, who has been our general manager now for a few years, will still run stuff through Billy and off Billy, but baseball operations, that's not what Billy is actually running now anymore for the Oakland Athletics. He really is basically, he's got the fancy title, but he's the right-hand man to our owner. Not only for our owner and the A's, but, you know, our owner has a lot of other, including the Gap and all these other things. He's going to help the owner in other business also. So it's just evolving in a career. I mean, at some point, you know, are we calling a guy up? Are we doing this? Are we doing that? You know, you've been there, done that. It's time that you evolve into other things. And Billy has a lot of interest outside of baseball, too. So this was just natural for him to start doing other things, but still being a part of the A's family, because, it's, you know, he said in his press conference, this is who I am. This is where I essentially grew up. And he never wants to leave that.
Chris, we continue to read about the Coliseum and rumors and everything else involving the A's in the stadium and everything. I think about the fans in this situation too. It's such a passionate fan base and such they love the Oakland A's. How difficult has this been?
Well, I'm sure longtime Seattle fans remember back to, you know, what's going to happen with the Kingdome? Are the Mariners going to stay? And what's going to happen with the Supersonics? All of a sudden, the Supersonics left. I mean, you guys have been through it before. I mean, think, in a very short time, Oakland has lost the NFL and the NBA in a very short amount of time. It's crazy. Not enough people talk about that. I mean, you had the Raiders go to Vegas, and you had the Warriors, even though people go, well, they stayed in town. No. They went across the bay to San Francisco. They took their offices. They took their tax money. They took everything, their employment. They took everything and took it to a different city. San Francisco is not Oakland. So they left. Where are we? You know, it's funny. I was going down to the, you know, we had the golf tournament here in the Northern California at Pebble Beach this week. And I was driving down. I was up early and I was listening to the front office show on Sirius XM with Jim Bowden and Jim Duquette, and they do a great job, but they're talking about our situation and Tampa's situation, because obviously baseball wants to expand. One of the teams is going to be Dave Stewart, our old pitcher, A's Hall of Famer, who they're all set in Nashville. I do a lot of TV with Dave, so I've gotten to know exactly what they got going. They're going to be the Nashville Stars. They have all their money in place. They got the money in the account ready for the expansion fee. They've worked with the local politicians. They have exactly where they're going to build. It's just not a ballpark, but they're going to build an arena. They're going to help out Tennessee State with some stuff. I mean, they've got their whole plan ready to rock as soon as baseball is ready to go. So that's one of the teams that will be the expansion team. I don't know where the other team will be yet. But basically, baseball can't expand to 32 until you got Oakland and Tampa set. And, you know, this goes back to way back to when the A's wanted to move to Fremont, which is south of Oakland. Then they wanted to move to San Jose, blocked by the Giants. And the only reason why they're able to be blocked by the Giants, because a two-team market has equal territorial rights. So Mets, Yankees, White Sox, Cubs, Angels, and the Dodgers, they have equal territorial rights. Well, we gave that up years ago. We gave that up to the San Francisco Giants when the San Francisco Giants tried to move to San Jose. But so we gave them those territorial rights so they could get it on the ballot in San Jose to move from San Francisco to San Jose. Well, two ballots failed in San Jose. So they had to either make it work in San Francisco or they were going to go to St. Petersburg, Florida. They would have been the Tampa Giants playing in the Trop. Well, they saved it in San Francisco, but then the Giants said, hey, we had to pay for our own ballpark. We're keeping these territorial rights. And the A's, for whatever reason, I wasn't around then, didn't grab those rights back saying, hey, we're a two-team market. It's equal rights. So when the A's tried to go to San Jose, which is now Silicon Valley and all the money and the company, the Giants blocked it. So this has been going on for a long, long time. So basically, they were forced to stay in Oakland. And I find it funny that I don't know if you guys have been following the Tampa situation, because it's been, do we do it in St. Petersburg or Tampa? It's been a mess. Well, now they've come out with these new renderings and they're going to build this little Trop city right where they are. And everybody's like, oh, they're safe. They're not going to do Montreal. And I'm listening to the press conference. I'm like going, are you kidding me? Their president in this press conference and after was saying, hey, we can't wait to meet with the mayor and see what the mayor's ideas are. They have nothing. They have a press conference and renderings. They have no agreement. The city council hasn't voted on it. No one's decided how it gets paid for. And everybody looks at the A's situation and they go, oh my God, the A's are, Oakland has gotten over $300 million in grants. We have passed all these hurdles. Part of where our ballpark's going to be is on the port, which was going to be the big vote. Can they get the port? We won the port vote. We are so far ahead of where Tampa is, but they have a press conference and the mayor says they want to do it. And the national media thinks they're ahead of us. I'm like, they have no idea how far they are. We have gone so far down this road. And then you throw Vegas in there. Vegas had to be brought in because, you know, Raiders moving to Vegas, that freaks everybody out. You had to bring a boogeyman in to be able to have some leverage. You got to have leverage with politicians, bottom line. So we're down in Vegas. So it's as our team president says, Dave Cavill, it's it's two tiers. It's parallel paths. So where we are right now is trying to get that agreement final, having the city council vote on it, agree on it. We agree because you got to have a plan. You got to agree on a plan before you put shovels in the ground. And hopefully that's going to work. Hopefully we're going to find out coming up here exactly, all right, is it Oakland or is it Vegas? Right now they're down meeting in Vegas. Supposedly it's been good meetings. We've been a lot in Vegas. I don't know how much you guys know that. There's been a lot of meetings down in Vegas. So we're going to see. But it is hard to build in California. It is hard to build on Portland. It's hard dealing with city officials when they have issues that are beyond baseball. And it's beyond building a new ballpark. This is in Oakland, this is a $12 billion project. It's the most expensive project in California history. Think about that. I don't think a lot of people understand how big this project is, how expensive this project is. As they like to say, it's complicated.
That's a good summary. Thank you for that. And
it's hard to put it all into words, to be honest with you. When you get asked the questions, it's like there's so much going on. It's hard to like there. And it's been going on for years. I mean, we've had stuff going on in Sacramento. This goes to Washington, D.C. I mean, everything to get built. And it's really hard to build in California. It's hard to build in Oakland. It's hard to build where part of the land's on the port. I mean, that's why it's so valuable, right? Think about that. Building on the San Francisco Bay Area, mm-hmm. or I should say the San Francisco Bay, it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Most people can't build on the San Francisco Bay anymore. That's been long gone. This would be a fresh project on the Bay in San Francisco. How much that would be worth on the Oakland side? It's worth a lot of money. So it's really complicated.
What's your gut on what the final outcome is going to be here?
I think it gets done in Oakland because it's gotten to be so far. Right. And Oakland needs this project. Oakland needs this project for jobs. I mean, so many things after the pandemic, different projects stalled and have gone away in Oakland. This is the one major project, the construction of everything that's going to be around it, all the commercial real estate property, all the condos, all the stuff that goes on. I mean, the local builders and unions and all these people are behind it because it's going to be jobs. And then you're talking about turning a part of Oakland into just a great, you know, we see it 13 miles away. If you look at a map and look at where that part south of Market Street in San Francisco, what it looked like before then Pac Bell was opened and what it looks like now, you'd be amazed, right? You'd be amazed at what San Francisco looked like then and what it looks like now. So we have a 13 miles across the bay. You can see if you build a ballpark, what it can do for a city. And we have that blueprint. So I think we're just so far down the line, and I know baseball fans want it to all be about new ballpark means players, which you see it. New ballparks get built. There's that honeymoon period, and it doesn't mean there's going to be endless cash and endless free agents coming. You guys can attest to that. But I think what you need to realize is that there's so much money to be made off this project that I think you're kind of crazy to walk away from it. Once again, building on the bay. The waterfront is an opportunity not many people get. So you build a ballpark, you build it right there on the water. It could be something really, really special.
Well, Chris, we kept you for a long time. It's your own fault. You're too good. But
I'm all warmed up now. This is like BP. I'm ready for my show now. It's great.
Thank you for all the time tonight. We'll talk to you soon.
You guys be well.
Chris Townsend, part of the A's broadcast team. We will wrap things up when we return on Hot Stove right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Oh, welcome back one final time to Hot Stove tonight. We have a couple more of these before we smoothly glide into the Cactus League report when spring training opens. So a couple of more Hot Stoves until everyone gets down to Arizona. Pitchers and catchers reporting right around the corner as we get closer and closer to opening day. If you missed any part of this show, you can catch it all on Mariners Pod coming up tomorrow. It was a great one. We started speaking with Cal Raleigh. Jerry Dipoto joined us. Teoscar Hernandez, first time chatting with him. Stephen Vogt as well. And Chris Townsend from the Oakland A's broadcast. This was a good one. And that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks a lot to Brady back in our Seattle studios. For Aaron Goldsmith and Shannon Dreher, this is Gary Hill saying so long. We'll talk to you next week on Hot Stove.